Chapter 40. The sun had finally taken a seat low in the sky about the time Jesse got to where Lundquist and Molly were waiting, Lundquist holding the evidence bag with the index card. "Is this all he had on him?" Lundquist asked, waving the clear plastic bag in the air. "One second, Brian." Jesse walked past him and went over to where Peter Perkins was packing away his equipment. "What's up, Jesse? Did you see the blood off to the side of the body?"
"I did. I got a sample of it, marked it in my notes, and got photos of it."
Perkins tilted his head in confusion.
"Why are you asking?"
"You didn't move the body, did you?"
"You know I know better than that. All I did was check for a pulse to make 100% sure he was dead. Then I backed away and followed procedure."
Jesse smiled as best he could, given how lousy he was feeling, and patted Perkins's left biceps.
"Good work. I had to ask."
When Jesse got back to where Molly and Lundquist were standing, Lundquist repeated his question.
"Is this all he had on him?"
"All I could find.
An old index card. Not much to go on."
"I'm not so sure," Jesse said. That got Molly's attention.
"Not sure about what?"
"Something doesn't feel right about this."
"What feels right about murder?" she asked.
"It's not only that," Jesse said. "That car was stolen from up north. Why come back to Paradise? Why would he expose himself like that?"
Molly spoke first. "Maybe he had no choice, Jesse. Maybe he had left something behind in that shed on his way out of town. Money or something he took from Maud's house we didn't know about."
Jesse remained silent.
"More likely he was meeting someone, and whoever it was didn't feel like sharing. Possibly his partner," Lundquist said.
Jesse shook his head.
"Maybe. I don't like it."
Molly pointed over Jesse's shoulder.
"Well, you're going to like this even less."
When he turned, Jesse saw the mayor's black Suburban pulling to a stop. He had hoped he might be able to get away from the scene before the mayor showed, if only to shower again, shave, and shut his eyes for an hour.
"Brian," he said, turning back to Lundquist, "see what your lab can do with that. I'll have Peter send the rest of the stuff over as soon as possible."
"Okay, Jesse, but we're not done talking about this crime scene and what you don't like about it."
"Fine, go ahead. We'll talk later," Jesse said. "Molly, you too. I'll deal with the mayor."
"You sure, Jesse?"
"Always. Now get out of here." But as he watched Lundquist and Molly retreat to their vehicles, he noticed only Nita Thompson getting out of the Suburban, two large cups of coffee in her hands. There was no sign of Mayor Walker. As she got to Jesse, Nita handed him one of the cups.
"I think this is how you like it," she said, "but you look like you could use it whether it's how you like it or not."
He took a big sip of the steaming coffee, the smell of it filling his head. He was almost as thankful for the aroma as he was for the taste of the coffee.
"Thanks. Where's Mayor Walker?"
Nita ignored the question.
"Rough night?"
"I've had rougher ones. The mayor?"
"Right, sorry.
I advised her not to show her face here until we knew what we were dealing with."
"That's why the media hasn't shown up. You don't know how to spin this yet."
"I don't know why I ever underestimated you," she said.
"Is it him, Kirk Kernut?"
"Looks like him, but he had no ID on him and the car was stolen. We'll be certain as soon as we run the prints."
"So what else do we have, Jesse? I mean, who would kill someone out here, of all places?"
"I'll tell you that when we have some idea about the evidence.
Come on, Jesse, give me something."
He thought about that for a second before answering. His instinct was to say nothing. He still didn't trust Nita as far as he could throw her, but he also knew that having her in his debt for once might not be a bad thing.
"There's something not right about this."
She laughed a laugh disconnected from amusement.
"Not right. Nothing's right about this."
"That's not what I meant. I've done a fair amount of homicide investigations. I've been to a lot of murder scenes, and this one just feels wrong."
"Wrong how?"
Again, he hesitated. He didn't want to say anything that she might be able to turn against him later if his sense was wrong.
"Just this," he said. "If you were Kernut, would you come back to Paradise?"
And it was called in by an anonymous caller, not to 911, but to the station landline.
Someone wanted us to know the body was here and wasn't waiting for a jogger to find him. You think it was the killer? Maybe. Geez, Jesse. Do you think you have some kind of psycho on your hands? Nita's use of the word you didn't escape Jesse's notice. Jesse had given her all he was going to. I think a lot of things right now. That's why I have to see what comes of the evidence. Nita Thompson shook her head. 2 murders in town in less than a week. It's a nightmare for all of us. Jesse understood that the biggest nightmare was his. Nita and the mayor's nightmare was about how to spin the news and control the fallout. His was solving the murders and saving his job.
Chapter 41. Jesse didn't particularly enjoy using his authority in a threatening way. But there were times he just had to. He hated bullying people, hated bullies, hated them as a kid, as a ball player, even when they were teammates, and as a cop most of all. He had his share of run-ins with them since his arrival in Paradise. It never ended well for the bullies. And so it was with very little enthusiasm that he warned the guys who worked for the ME's office about not revealing the exact location of where the body had been found. "Not a word," he said, giving them both an icy stare. "Not to your wives, not to your kids, not to your friends. No one. You do, and you'll answer to me." He'd asked Tamara to reinforce his message. She agreed, but was curious. "What's the point, Jesse?" "Until I know what's really going on here, I don't need any other headaches." "You know, Jesse, it's impolite to lie to your friends. What's the real reason?" "I don't like speculating about crimes, especially murders. But my hunch is that the person who killed our Vic called it in." "Why? And why wait a day?" "Good questions. The obvious answer is that he wanted us to know." "The less obvious reason is why he wanted us to know. Why wait a day?" "My guess is that he was hoping a jogger or someone walking their dog would stumble across the body. When that didn't happen, he got impatient." "Sounds more like he needed you to find the body more than wanted you to," she said. Jesse smiled at her. "Exactly. It's like he needs the attention of the press. So I want to starve him of the attention as much as we can. Things work best when everyone's agendas line up. At the moment, I don't want to deal with the press any more than the mayor does. And if the killer's trying to screw with my department, good luck with that. What if you're too successful with robbing him of attention and he kills again?" Jesse ignored the question. "When will I get the autopsy results?" "Voila," she said, handing him the file. "It's him, by the way. Kernet. We printed him and sent the prints to Lundquist in your office. Got an immediate hit." "Good. And don't worry about another body turning up. Kernet's wasn't an impulse or random killing." "You look more human than you did this morning, and you smell a lot better." He answered without looking up from the file. "Molly gave me a few hours cover, and I got some sleep and some food in me. Amazing what a shower, shave, and some cologne will do." "Okay, Jesse, leave the file and get out of my office. I've got work to do." "Thanks, Doc," he said, put the file down on Tamara's desk and walked to the door. "Jesse," she called after him, "you can't keep drinking this way. You just can't."
"Why not? Afraid my liver will explode?"
"There's that, too, but no. You can't keep on like this because it's selfish, and you're not a selfish man."
Tamara's parting words rang in Jesse's head louder than the hammer that had pounded in it earlier that day. So loud that he could barely pay attention as he sat across the table from Lundquist at Daisy's. He did have the wherewithal to introduce Lundquist to Daisy when she brought the coffee pot over to their booth. She was her usual diplomatic self, which is to say it was a good thing Lundquist wasn't easily offended.
"Lundquist, huh? Norwegian?"
"Swedish."
"Too bad,"
she didn't elaborate.
Jesse said, "He's taken over Captain Healy's job."
"Healy? I liked Healy. He was a good tipper. Swedes good tippers?"
"Depends," Lundquist said. Daisy sneered at him and shook her head.
"Wrong answer, son. Wrong answer."
"She always so charming?" Lundquist asked when she walked away. Jesse said,
On her good days, yeah. You read the autopsy report? It's Kernut. Jesse wanted to know. Anything else in the report catch your eye? Lundquist didn't answer right away. He reached for his coffee mug instead, put in an obscene amount of sugar and a few drops of cream. Halfway to his lips, he put his coffee mug back on the table.
Wait a second, is this right?
There were traces of filter paper and metal fragments in the wounds, not from the bullets dug out of the body. Holy crap. The killer used a homemade sound suppressor. Looks that way. What's that tell you, Brian? It's evidence of premeditation. What else? He used a homemade suppressor. Tells me he was an amateur. Or not. Maybe he just wants us to think he is. Lundquist rubbed his left hand across his cheek. You think this guy is playing with us? Jesse didn't say anything. He just sat there, drinking his coffee. Chapter 42. This time, the press conference was held at the police station, and Mayor Walker was nowhere in sight. Even Nita Thompson hadn't gotten closer than a TV screen in her office. If Jesse's plan to starve the media of information went wrong, it would blow up in his face and his face alone. It would also supply the mayor with the excuse she'd been looking for to make Jesse an issue. Nothing like firing someone to look like a woman of action and to draw attention away from the real issue at hand. Jesse understood the risks. He knew that Nita Thompson hadn't gone along with his plan out of the goodness of her heart. He still wasn't sure she had a heart. No, she had gone along with it because there was only an upside for her client. It was a win-win situation for the mayor, no matter how things turned out. But why had Jesse done it if all the risk was his? That was simple. He'd bought himself and his cops room to maneuver. In the end, what mattered to Jesse wasn't losing his job or looking good in the press. What mattered was catching the bad guys. What had become pretty clear to him, even if it wasn't yet clear to anyone else, was that the ransacking of Maud Kane's house, her death, and Kurt Kingston Kernut's murder were a continuation of the same crime. In spite of Jesse's own rules about jumping to conclusions, he knew there had to be a connection. The bigger question was, why murder Kernut in that spot? Why murder him in paradise at all? The answer seemed an obvious one, to draw as much attention as possible. For the moment, there was nothing to do on Kernut's homicide until some of the forensics results came back. Molly, come into my office, he said after the press had cleared out. She wasn't happy. What is it, Jesse? I'm exhausted. Give me 5 minutes. 5 minutes? I gave you 2 hours, and I've been on the clock since, geez, I don't even remember which shift I started on. Think of the overtime pay. Right after I stop thinking about strangling you. You drink and I suffer. How does that work? Believe me, Molly, I suffered. I'm still suffering. I'm probably going to suffer all night if I don't take a... Woe is you, Molly. I'm sorry, Jesse Stone. I love you, but I'm done with risking my ass for you. Come on, Molly. It's not funny anymore. I've got two of the girls in college, and my pension, good as it is, wouldn't cut it. I'm sorry, Molly. You know what I think of you. It's not even me, Jesse. When Suit helps me with you, it's one thing. Okay, he looks up to you. He would risk anything for you. He has. That was his choice. But you made me put Alicia at risk, and that's where I draw the line. And there we were again. Tamara Elkin's words about Jesse's drinking, his selfishness going round and round in his head. He nodded. It won't happen again. Molly was skeptical, but she had already said more than she wanted to. She didn't have any energy left for a fight. All right, I surrender, Jesse. What did you want? Maud Kane's house. What about it? Remember I asked you to go through it and look for a logbook or registration books, right? Well? Without a word, Molly stood up from the chair across from Jesse's desk and left the office. She came back a minute later carrying an evidence bag. Inside the clear plastic was what seemed to be three old-fashioned composition books, the kind with the rigid black-and-white cardboard covers and the black fabric binding, the kind Jesse had used as a kid in school, but were no longer very common.
In all the excitement, I forgot about it, Molly said. I found them in the basement. They're pretty beat up, and they're more about financial record-keeping than they are registration books. But there are plenty of names in them.
Recognize any of them? Molly shrugged.
All right, get out of here. Come in tomorrow when you want, but once you're here, you're going to get all the overtime you can handle, for the right reasons.
She left without another word. When the door closed behind her, Jesse reached into his drawer for some gloves. But before examining the notebooks, he stood, looked out his window at the water, at Stiles Island. When he turned back around, he reached for his desk phone and dialed Dix's number.